We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home, and we're up to the 12th Mishnah. Hillel v'Shamai kibelu mehem. Hillel and Shammai received their tradition from Shmaya and Avtalia. Hillel Omer. So Hillel was the Nasi, 100 years before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, which puts him approximately 42 before the Common Era. And Hillel taught the following. Hevei mitalmidav shel Aaron. Be from the students of Aaron, the Kohen Gadol. Ohev shalom, who loved peace. Virodev shalom, and pursued peace. Ohev et haberiot, Aaron loved Hashem's creatures. Umekarvan latorah, and he brought them close to Torah. So that's the message we hear from Hillel. So our sages say, Aaron would always try to bring peace between people. And the Gemara even says that Aaron would hear about a couple who had a spat. You think Am Yisrael in the desert were big tzaddikim. How come there were any fights among their couples? Says, no, there were fights. And Aaron would go, and Aaron would make peace between them. How did Aaron make peace? It says he would come over to the wife and say, you know, your husband really loves you. He wants to make peace. He wants to apologize to you. He really wants to be back together again. Ooh, really? Wow, Aaron says so. He'd go to the husband and say, you know, your wife really loves you. She really wants to be back together again. Ooh, if Aaron says so. So they'd believe it. And then they'd get back together again. And when they'd have a child, they'd name him Aaron. And it says there were thousands of children named Aaron after Aaron HaKohen. That just goes to show you how many fights there were. People who were serious enough and they're fighting that they needed Aaron to make peace between them. So first of all, we learn a big lesson from what Chazal taught us, that at the root of every fight is the lack of recognition, my partner loves me. If we can believe that, then we can work everything else out. And if we can make our spouse believe that, then we can work everything else out. Very often we focus on other aspects of the relationship. You didn't ask me to. We never agreed that I would. You're not being fair. You're not being reasonable. This isn't what I bargained for. This isn't. You have no legitimacy in asking for that. Husbands don't do that. I'm just not interested. All kinds of excuses. There's one question. Can you convince your spouse that you deeply care for them and they're the most important person in your life? One question. If you can convince them that, then everything else falls into place. Can you be convinced, are you willing to believe that that's the role you play in your spouse's life? So when I said the first part, most people were thinking, I'm willing to work hard to convince her of that. But are you willing to be convinced yourself? So most people would say, I wish it were true. Of course I can't be convinced. It's just not true. You see, but that's where relationships hit a real, real bump in the road. If you're not willing to be convinced, why should she be convinced? Believe it. Are you willing to believe that she really, really, really wants what's best for you? You really matter to her. So then why didn't she do A or B or C? If she really cared, how could she do E, F, and G? And how could she even say X, Y, and Z? How many times do women say things and men are like, that's it. I'm going to continue this relationship, but it's not what I thought it would be. Men have breaking points. And when certain things happen, so it's like the straw that broke the camel's back. And then it's like, okay, I'll go along with the relationship. I'll keep building this family. However, and you're not allowed to do that. You have to be able to say, she didn't mean it. Women say things they don't mean. 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 I could spend the whole class telling you that. And if I could only get you to believe that, then you'd have a tremendous tool in your back pocket. Women say things they don't mean. So what if she said, I hate you, I wish I was never married to you. So what if she says, cruelty gets new meaning when I meet you. So what if she says, I hate the day I ever met you. Women say things they don't mean. Why? Your wife doesn't say that? Good, so you're in a better place. Now you know what else is out there. Why do women say things they don't mean? Because women are not focused on the literal meaning of what they say. They're focused on expressing the emotion that they feel. Words have a different usage in their language. So if you would say, I regret the day I met you, you would mean, I regret the day I met you. If she says, I regret the day I met you, what she means is, you really annoyed me today. But then why'd you word it that way, right? Isn't it frustrating for us men? They say these things and we hear them the way men hear them. But that's not what they're saying. It's not what they're saying. They don't even mean it. They don't mean what they're saying. Men are completely different. When men say, I regret the day I met you, that moment he regrets the day he met her. He means it. Right?
The garbage story is so true. She says, I put garbage in front of you. Why didn't you see it? But I saw it. Why do you think it down? She says that to me all the time.
All right.
I caught him finally.
But women don't mean what they say. So, can a man be convinced? Is a man willing to believe that he is the most important person in his wife's life? In every normal marriage, that is so. I'm going to tell you a secret. I wish I could turn off the recorder. Women shouldn't hear this secret. What? Yeah, what am I going to do? Shut this. I'm going to tell you a secret that it's built into a woman's nature that the most important person in her life is her husband. It is built in. It is not built into a man's nature. It is much easier for you to believe that you're the most important person in her life, because 999 out of 1,000 marriages, that's so, and it doesn't matter how bad the marriage is. You, as a man, play a much more pivotal role in her life naturally, irrespective of what's going on, than she does in your life. That's the way Hashem created men and women. To a man, it's annoying to be at home. He has other options. He has his friends, he has his job, he has his children, he has his books, he has his hobby, he has his cave, he has his car. So every man has their little world that they go into. This guy likes listening to music, that guy likes walking in nature, this guy likes rifles, that guy likes plants. They go into their world and they're okay, because marriage is only a part of their life. To a woman, nothing else matters. She could have a job, she could be a CEO, she could be raking in $1 million a month, she could be doing a lot of things, but if she's married and she's normal, then 999 times out of 1,000, what's most important to her is what you think of her. Much more than everything else that's happening in her life. And that's not the way Hashem created men. It's pretty interesting. So for us to believe that we are the most important person in their life is very easy. For them to believe that they are the most important person in our life, well, you got to work hard to try and convince her. But the key to believing it is to be willing to believe it. Aaron was able to convince both sides of that one point. The other side really cares for you. And that's a point which we have a very hard time believing, because we have a lot of things that we point at and we say, if I really mattered to her, she wouldn't have said this and she wouldn't have done that and she would have done the other thing. There are so many favors I've asked her which she didn't do. There are so many things that she asked me that why did she bother asking me if she really cared for me? So we point at a lot of things which are false. Which are false. At the baseline of the relationship, if we can strengthen that point, then everything else falls into place. One question. Are you willing to accept, are you willing to believe that she really, really cares about you? But then why does she say all those things? It's a good question. I gave you one answer. There are many other answers. Why does she say all those things?
Good question, I'd rather actually. If a woman, we're human, right? So why does a woman always ask to do exactly the one exact way all the time? Like, if you tell you something, why didn't you do it the way I wanted in this way? Why is that happening all the time?
I want to explain something, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to take a very simple scenario now. Okay. And those of you who are married know that my scenario is accurate, okay? I'll describe two scenarios, three scenarios. These things happen all the time. Okay, let's take scenario number one. Why is it that women always want you to do something a certain way, and when you do it different, they always get very annoyed? So I want to take, boy, how many heads are nodding here? Your heads shouldn't fall off. I want to give a few scenarios, okay? You just hosted a meal, Sheva Brachos, Friday night. You had 50 guests. You're both very tired. You worked hard preparing the meal. At the end of the meal, you lovingly stand there and wash all the dishes. Okay? You clean up the dishes. You take out all the bags of garbage with the chatpami. As you take out the garbage, your wife says, "Why can't you notice it's dripping? You're dripping the garbage all over." And you feel like going, "Here, you take it out. You do it, right?" You're washing the dishes, and afterwards your wife looks at it and goes, "Why do you put the dishes in the dish rack that way? They're all going to fall and they don't even fit. And they're not going to dry that way." And you're thinking, "I just worked for an hour washing dishes so you could read your magazine. And all you have to say is, why do you line up the dishes that way?" You come home really intent on helping. You're going to be a really good husband. You want your wife to come into Shabbos well rested. So you actually nix 4 hours of your schedule in order to help. You throw things into the laundry. You sweep the floor. You wash the floor. You prepare the rooms. And you're all petered out. You've been working really hard, doing something men don't know how to do so well. But you've done the best job you can. And your wife comes home, and you see her trying very hard to be nice about what you just did. You did the laundry. She puts this fake smile on her face. And you're waiting for this amazing thank you. You worked so hard. And she goes, "Did you separate the whites from the colored?" And you go, yeah, I did. And then she starts taking out the laundry and she sees her white socks in there. So she goes, "Oh, so you thought I wanted my white socks to turn blue?" And you're thinking, that's all you can say? I've been working all day? That's all you can say? And then she goes, "And you know that if you walk on the floor you just washed, then the floor has all kinds of stains on it." You go, "Where?" And she goes, no, it's okay. And then she looks behind the door and says, "Can I just have the broom again?" And you're thinking, a thank you would be like an order, maybe? You know, I did just work for 4 hours. And then she goes, "You remember you promised me you'd do the shopping on your way home? Did you?" And you go, "Well, I came home 4 hours early to do this, but I'm going to go out and shop now." And you're thinking, "I really want to go out. Of course, I don't want to be here. I'm going to go out and do that shop." And she goes, "The store is closing in 10 minutes. I'm supposed to cook for Shabbos now. I don't have the food. How are we going to make this work?" And you're thinking, oh boy. Did I hit the nail on the head? All the married men here know exactly what I'm talking about. Bullseye, right?
Exactly.
Okay, each one in his own scenario.
That's exactly my scenario.
I'm so excited.
With the answer, I'm excited.
The answer breaks up into many segments. The first thing is they're wrong. Women are wrong. It's a cultural thing. There's no saying they're right here, but the fact that you realize all women are doing it it's a calming, at least you know this is the norm, unfortunately, in our generation. It's wrong. A woman should be appreciative. meaning a woman should say thank you. A woman should recognize that a lot of effort was invested, and a woman would not appreciate it if after all of her effort, a husband would come in and point out all the things that are lacking and what she did and all the things he thinks she should do different. And we all know that women are super sensitive. If she washed the dishes and you walk in and you move a single knife, she goes, it's all up. I did a terrible thing. I didn't put the knives away the way I should have, right? So I'm not coming to say that they should forgo the thank you. They shouldn't. However, we also have to understand the difference between the way we see the world and they see the world. And I'll give an example. Let's say you had to give a presentation at work tomorrow on the effects of white jelly beans on children. Do white jelly beans get children? Calmer or not? And you're supposed to feed children white jelly beans as part of the presentation. So you go to a store and you're buying white jelly beans. You tell the seller, I need a bag of 500 white jelly beans. So the store owner goes to his white jelly beans box and he starts scooping out jelly beans and putting them in your bag. Now, part of your presentation is you're going to put a jug of white jelly beans in front of the audience, and then you're going to call children up, and you're going to demonstrate how when you put white jelly beans before children, they get less excited than jelly beans that have all kinds of colors, and that this is important for marketing, that white is not such an exciting color for children. But it's very important for you that you have white jelly beans. Now, you start noticing that every scoopful of white jelly beans that he puts in, well, sometimes there's a blue jelly bean, sometimes there's a green jelly bean, sometimes there's a black jelly bean. And you go, could you just take out that black one? And he goes, you're buying 5,000 jelly beans. You care about one black one? And you go, yeah. So he goes, you're nuts. He says, I won't charge you. I'll reduce the fee by 20 cents. Leave me alone. And then he takes the next spoon, and there's a green jelly bean in there. And you go, could you get that green jelly bean out? And he goes, I told you. I'll take off for every green and black one. I'll take off a little bit off the price, but stop driving me crazy. You know why you need it white, because the whole presentation is you're showing white, white, white. You can't afford to have colors there. So you're getting antsy because you know that every colored jelly bean, you're going to have to go through that box of 5,000 jelly beans and look for them and take them out. So to you, it gets more and more aggravating. You're watching those jelly beans fill and you can't say anything. And at the end, you feel so frustrated. You're like, can't you just get a new bag of jelly beans and give me white jelly beans? Right? You're getting all annoyed. And the seller looks at you like you're crazy. Man, what do you care? Why do you care? Because you know what you have to do with those jelly beans. And you know that you will have to fix, and you will have to pluck out every colored jelly bean from that, and you also know how much you have left to do, and this is something which is really going to take your time unnecessarily. And you also feel like, I asked him to buy white jelly beans. Why did he say yes and now give me a mix? Even if he's not charging me. We perceive the world differently than women do. We are very, our vision is very tunnel vision. Men focus on one task, and they do it. Now, if as a man is focusing on one task, a woman does this to him. Honey, as you're cleaning up the house, don't forget to take out the garbage. And do me a favor, put up the rice for dinner. And don't forget to call up Freddie and tell him that next week we won't be able to make it, we have a wedding. And by the way, make sure to hang up the laundry when you're done. And when the kids come home, remind them to take off their boots. They don't want to get the whole house muddy. You just washed the floor. But remember that Shmendrick, he doesn't have good socks. You have to get him new socks when he comes into the house. Make sure he puts on socks. Now remember that Chaim had a fever this morning. I want you to check his fever when he comes through the door. And by the way, Avraham Shmini said that he'd really love it if you heat up yesterday's pizza for him. So if you could throw that into the oven in 20 minutes, that would be great. Now, Sarah told us that her watch stopped working. Do me a favor, take a look if it's the watch is gone or it needs a battery replacement. And you're going berserk. Smoke is coming out of your ears. What are you doing to me? Let me write it down. And she looks at you like this was all in her mind all along. Why do you have to write it down? This is what every day looks like by her. But we don't work that way, right? We're very focused on cleaning the floor. So part of our focused tunnel vision is also in our mind, I wanted to do A, I did A, say thank you. In a woman's mind, I have to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, A. She has a million things that she's doing. And when you do A, and you didn't do it all the way, it's like buying those white jelly beans with a bunch of black, green, blue, yellow. Now she has a lot of work to sort them out. So if you can imagine yourself buying the white jelly beans and getting really frustrated with every spoonful that has another one or two, and it's because you realize that you're making me work hard and it's for nothing. Why can't you just take out that black jelly bean when you pour in the white jelly beans, right? That's the way they view everything we do. They don't understand how hard it is for us. They don't understand that when we wash the floor, for us to close that door and wash behind the door is an impossibility. Men just can't do it. They have to be married about 5 years, get yelled at about 50 times, and then they might remember once. But there's something with us. We don't know how to do that. Eventually you learn. Maybe you went to this class enough times, you learn. They don't know how difficult it is for us to do all the things that to them are second nature. And when they see the things that we did off, their nerves stop popping. It's like, now I have to deal with A. Now I have to fix what you did in B, what you didn't do with C. And they see a very different picture than we see. So that's why they have a very hard time being gracious. They look at the world differently. They see down the road, they see the broader picture, they see the details of the picture. We see one thing. I washed the floor. I took off 4 hours and I washed the floor. Why can't you say thank you? She sees, I still have to finish what you did, plus everything else, and you promised me you'd do the shopping and you forgot to do the shopping, and so now suddenly her world is all uptight. We don't match. Hashem created us that we don't match on this point. So now it becomes work to match. It becomes frustrating work. It's frustrating for her. It's frustrating for us because she's frustrated. You worked so hard and you didn't even help me. Ah, you helped me, but I still have a lot of work, and it makes her uptight. You get uptight because you did all the work. And what are you dying for? You're wishing that she would compliment you, she would show appreciation, and they don't get it. Women don't know how much a man is dying for some appreciation. Tell me I'm great. You know that a man is so simple that a woman could compliment his nose, his eyebrows. You know, you blink amazingly, and the guy feels on cloud number 9. Just look for things to compliment him for, and the guy will be happy. It doesn't matter what. No, man. Men are so simple, but women don't get it. Women don't know that if they would compliment him a little bit, they could get him to do everything. And they don't realize that when they complain, they sap all his strength. Now he doesn't feel like doing anything because we each have a different fuel that we work on. Men work on the fuel of compliments, and women work on the fuel of appreciation and love. Tell me that you couldn't handle life without me. Tell me that your life would fall apart without me. Tell me that I'm the most meaningful part of your life. Tell me that all day long you were waiting to see me. Tell me, that's what she needs to hear. Then she has the energy to move forward. What does the man do? He does the exact opposite. The male reaction, she gets him annoyed. What does he do? We'll talk. And he walks out. I can manage without her. He gives her the exact opposite message of what she needs to hear. She needs to hear, I can't manage without you. Yeah. But men, when they get annoyed, give the exact opposite message. It's like when a woman says, don't bother taking me on that date. After the way you behave now, don't take me on that date. So what's the male response? I have better things to do with my time. That's fine.
Exactly.
And that's the worst answer. What does a man have to answer? A man has to say, you've got to be kidding. I can't go on with my week without spending some time with you. Of course, you want to insult me again, the way you just insulted me. That's why you want to take me on a date. You're going to behave that way, right? That's what the woman says. So what does the guy feel like saying? You don't get a grip. Lady, let's go have a good time. And what does she say? I don't want to have a good time with you. You just want to insult me. All you want to do is hurt my feelings. Pause. What does she want to hear? I can't manage without you. You're important to me. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I want you to be happy, and I cannot manage without you. But what's the classical male response? Fine. We don't have to go on a date tomorrow. Let me know when you want to go on a date. Right? Big macho man. But that's not what she needs to hear. That's not how you build a marriage.
Last question. Dishes. After Shabbos, we all clean up. I'm like 3 hours. I'm exhausted. I finished 5 dishes. At the end of the day, we forgot to finish the dishes. I'm like, why did she do that? I don't understand right? That one.
It's the same as the black jelly bean.
5 dishes, but I did everything else. I cleaned the table,
right.
Floor, everything, but 5 dishes.
So learn to do the 5 dishes. Believe me, even after you do the 5 dishes, you'll find the one you didn't see.
Okay.
At least you could know that everyone's living the same reality.
But the opposite, you do everything, she's on cloud nine. She smiles like crazy when you're really done. You eat everything that she likes. There's a difference. But it's only 1% of your life. 1% is like this, the rest is fantastic. You do the 1%. That I noticed. Makes that much difference.
Yeah, I don't know why men have this tendency to do 99%, not 100%. I don't know. Yeah.
Examples
No. On principle, not. This class has nothing to do with dating. You want a dating series? We're supposed to start that after Shavuos. This is post-marriage. Nothing we're saying here has any relevance to dating. If she treats you like this during dating, dump her. This all happens after marriage. If she's treating you like this during the dating, no way. Don't marry her. Dating has to be much better. Dating has to be much sweeter. No way she should treat you like this when you're dating. No way. This is the reality you discover after marriage. This is not during dating. No way. This has nothing to do with dating, what we're discussing now. I don't think anyone here got these reactions when they were dating. It's afterwards that this starts happening, not during the dating. So the first thing Hillel told us was, "Hevei mitalmidav shel Aaron, be from the students of Aaron." One of the things that help us in our behavior is when we think of someone. Ask yourself, how would this person react to this scenario? So Hillel says, your role model should be Aaron. Think of Aaron the Kohen. Think of his patience, his warmth, his love. If Aaron heard that a husband and wife had a fight, and the husband told his wife, I'm not willing to talk to you till you go and spit in the Kohen Gadol's eye. So Aaron would walk over and say, I got something in my eye. And the doctors say the only cure is if someone spits in my eye. Who could spit in my eye? And then the woman says, I'll help you. And then she could go back home and say, hey, I did what you said. So Aaron was the first to forgo his pride on behalf of others. And this is a recurring theme in his life. When his brother is going to be the leader of the Jewish people, he's happy. You get it. Great. You're the leader. What do you mean great? You were the leader until now, Aaron. You're willing to give up your role? Yeah. Be a student of Aaron. Can you be happy that someone else has more? That someone else is greater? That someone else is on top? So our role model, says Hillel, should be Aaron. Who's your Rebbe? Aaron. Hillel says, be from the students of Aaron. Ohev shalom. You have to love peace. It's an attitude. It's an attitude. Some people are always into the fight. It's, be competitive. You have to love peace. You have to love peace. You have to love peace. Let's take a few examples. Okay. Young teacher is teaching his first class. I witnessed this story. Young man, 18 years old, takes the first time he's teaching a class. And it's going well. And then, one day, he sees the kids need a break. So he stops class and he says, let's take a 5-minute break. Here's a ball. Guys, let's play in class. We're not going to go all the way down and back up. Play quietly, and 5 minutes we'll start class again. Okay, the guys are all excited. They play. 3 minutes into their playing, the eldest teacher of the school, who teaches next door to his classroom, walks in and sees the kids playing. And this old man starts yelling, what do you guys think you're doing? So the young teacher is on the side. He thought the old teacher didn't see him. He walks over and he says, please, I gave them permission to play now, 5 minutes. So the old teacher turns on him and says, you let them play now in the middle of the morning? So he goes, yeah, they needed a break. I let them play now. So the old teacher looks at the young one and says, you don't know how to teach. All the students are watching. Senior staff, youngest staff. Senior staff looks at him and in front of all the students says, you don't know how to teach. And then he starts yelling at the kids and the teacher together. Don't you ever think you can have recess and play during class time? This is the time to learn. And he storms out of the room. What do you do? In life, you will see people who are what we say in Hebrew, lo beseder. Okay? He's not right. What do you do? So the young teacher turned to the class and said, guys, he's an older person and we have to respect him. And if our playing disturbs his classroom, then we misestimated. You guys can continue your recess. We have to think for a minute, what did we do that annoyed him? What did we do that bothered his class? They realized that when they were playing, they were tossing the ball against the wall that was a shared wall with the other teacher. And the kids all agreed they would stop doing that. They didn't stop their recess. But that young teacher decided to make a friend of the older teacher. He didn't go against him. He didn't say, you know, you stick to your classroom, let me stick to my classroom, I won't bother you, you don't bother me. No, on the contrary. Kept smiling at him and developed a relationship. Why? Ohev shalom. It's an attitude. Is my goal in life, I'm going to be right? Or is my goal in life, I want to create peace? Creating peace means I have to create it. It means I have to find a way of making it work with the other person as much as I can. There will always be limits. There are times where if you make peace with something, then you're harming other people. It's not always right to make peace. Sometimes we have to know the limits. You can't tell your enemy, come, spend the Shabbos in my house, and then he harms your whole family. You're not going to do that. Making peace has its limits. But within those limits, and those limits are very broad, we pursue peace. Ohev shalom, it's an attitude. We have to love peace. We have to realize, I always tell this to my students, I say, remember, you can only build in peace. Sometimes you have to go to war, but through war you don't build. You will only be able to build through peace. And I'll tell you a story I can only tell you off the record. Can't say on the record. Guys, I apologize, you have to show up to class in order. Some things you only get here, live.